Okay, Parshas Vayakel. Here we go, one more time. Parshas Vayakel, Tavshin Ayin Aleph. Okay, I handed out a couple of pages which come from chapter 54 of the Mora, the Guide to the Perplexed, the last chapter, the summary chapter of the entire Mora Nevuchim, dealing with the acquisition of Chachma. We're going to be looking at that because we are focusing on two psukim in this week's parsha, and those two psukim are about women, ostensibly. We are in Perek Lamed Hey 35, psukim 25 and 26. So let's read these psukim. So Perek Lamed Hey 35, pasuk 25 says, "V'chol isha, and every woman, chachma slave who is." Her heart is wise. Chachma and lev go together here, right? Whose heart has chachma. And biyadeha tavu, with her hands she spun. And they brought the threads that they had spun of tcheles, turquoise, and argamana type of purple. And tolash hashani vesashesh. Basically, they spun together different threads that would be used for the curtains in the Beis HaMikdash. That was one of the jobs of the women. And then v'chol ha'nashim, this is in the plural notice, all women, not in the singular chol isha, all women, and here's a different type of phrase, which is more elevated, implies even a more of a skill. It says, asher nasa liban, that their hearts elevated them, you might say, or compelled them, osana b'chachma, that their hearts move them with wisdom, okay? Tavu es ha'izim, they spun the actual izim, the goats. Now they, Chazal say, this was very developed, very specialized skill. They spun the wool into threads while it was still on the backs of the animals. So it should never be separated so that it should not become tame, because tuma and separation are ideas that always go together. We're not going to get into the halachas of things become tame when they're separated from their source, but you know philosophically this is for sure the case. Death brings tumah, right? And last week we spoke about this, although not in this particular way. We said that making an image is taking something and separating even your inspiration, separating it from yourself. So it's somewhere you can go to on your terms, as opposed to something that drives you and consumes you, that almost you lose your bechira to, right? But something that's separated from you, they said that's the concept that was built into Avodah Zarah, into the Egel, and we said that that translates into the Tumah of death, which is a separation, right, from life. And to take away tumah of death, we use a para aduma, a grown-up egel, right? Or, if in the case of other types of death, an egla arufa. So the concept of separation is tameh, is death. The removal of tumah comes through the egel. We spoke about this idea a little bit last week. But the point here is that they are spinning while it's on the goat's back so that it doesn't become tameh. Now, we'll get into this more. Now, this idea that the women are associated with spinning and that it's a chachmas halev, that it's a wisdom, a knowledge of the heart. These ideas have to be obviously explored and understood, because normally we associate chachma with the mind, right? And lev with the heart, the emotions. We've spoken about this so much, what your mind knows, what your heart wants, right? And we've spoken about the idea that there has to be a higher level than your heart being forced to obey what your mind desires, what your mind knows, right? That your heart and your mind have to be one. And the reason we're focusing on this more today is because, remember that, building on what we said last week, is that the egel, right? The egel was the notion of keeping your inspiration at a distance, which means maintaining bechira. It's another way of saying maintaining bechira, right? That I can choose to either obey what's right or do what I want, but I always have a certain autonomy, versus when I have no choice anymore because my yearning is, ultimately, I've conditioned myself that my yearning, my taiva, my desire is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from me. And therefore, indulging it is not obeying a force like a slave to a master, but gratifying my urges, which is another way of saying, you know, eliminating some bechira. So we said that that first thing a person does when they're confronted with that possibility that they have no more bechira and they're not autonomous and they're so completely compelled by the MS is to go back, take a step back, fight that. We want to maintain our self, our I, our ani, our separateness. So that's the egel, right? And then the egel creates that separation, that it's other than me. The tikkun, of course, is Parshas Truma, right? The tikkun is, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us, right, that we should build a mishkan, Vishachanti besocham. I will then dwell within you. So really it's showing us, you know, what the sin is, so to speak, the creation of the distance, and what the tikkun is, reestablishing through the mishkan the fact that Hashem can actually dwell not outside of us, but within us. That's the highest level, right? Asuli mikdash, make for me a mikdash in our own selves. Veshachanti besocham, and I'll dwell within you. And from within yourself, you'll derive the inspiration that you really need to motivate you. But that is a lifelong effort. Our job can be kind of summed up as going from a place, right, where we are our, what we want, as we said, and what we know are separate, and we're autonomous, to going to a place where, like my grandfather always says it, you've handcuffed yourself to God and you've thrown away the key and you want what is right and you're compelled by that. And that's real chayrus, right? Does all this sound a little familiar? This is real chayrus. Real freedom is when you give in to what you want, when you indulge your urges, when you satisfy your desires. You're not compelled. You're just doing what you want to do. And that is, if what you want to do is purified and it's MS, then there's no greater freedom and pleasure in that. Now, here is the thing. If all of life is the journey between those two points, seeing myself as an autonomous I that chooses, or seeing myself as completely consumed, then the path in between is very, very tricky and very nuanced, and every moment of every day is part of the path. And we've said this many times, there's an escape hatch, and many religions and philosophies advocate it. What is that? Total disattachment. Disattachment from this world, right? We've talked about that too enough in the past. Disattachment. Because everything we're involved in can attach us and can kidnap us and can confuse us and escape us from achieving what Rambam will talk about as true knowledge, true understanding, true, ultimately true perfection. So here, women have a particular ability, and not just women. Remember a theme we've developed here very often. Zachar Nekeva Bara Osam. Every human being has a male and female capacity, quality inside them. The female quality of every human being is called Chachma Slave. It's the heart, it's the gut, it's the visceral desire, it's the intuitive knowledge. And what Chachma Slave is when the heart has the yearning and the desire to achieve real Chachma, that it's coming from inside, not compelled from the outside. That's Chachma Slave. And when you're compelled to achieve real Chachma, it's expressed as spinning, knowing how to spin, working on this spinning wheel, bringing together all the different strands that exist, all the different forces and situations and opportunities and strengths and achievements of every person, blending it all into one goal, which is called Chachma Slave, the desire to gain Chachma. We are cultivating in ourselves a yearning to gain Chachma. where it's not sufficient. It's a very, very high madrega, but it's not sufficient just to know there's chachma and like a slave force yourself to be obedient to what's emes. It's a very high madrega, halavai, everyone should be there, but the real truth is that yearning to have the emes be the way we think and the way we respond, and so that it becomes a just gratification of desire, that's a whole different madrega. That's real chayrus. So, first of all, I'm going to start here with a piece that comes here. This is from the Gemara in here. Why didn't somebody back there hold it? Okay, Yuma. Here's what it says. V'chol isha chachma slave. I can see it. I got it. Shala isha chachma es Rav Eliezer. V'chule isha chachma came to ask Rav Eliezer a question. And this was his answer to her. Amrullah, he said to her, whatever regarding the question, whatever it is, but ein chachma leisha ella bepelach. There's no wisdom to a woman other than in the spinning wheel. Okay? V'chein hu omer, and he quotes a pasuk, v'chol isha chachma slave biyadea tavuk. Each a woman who had the chachma of the lathe spun with her hands. My grandfather Schwab explains this clearly, as we know. Chazal do not explain their statements in essay form. Everything is written like this in a riddle form for us to decipher. When Rabbi Eliezer says to her, the only wisdom a woman has is with the spinning wheel, he's not being obtuse, okay? He doesn't know about Sarah and Rivka and Rachel and Leah and Esther and the verb, etc., etc. He is saying something deep. He is saying that the notion of spinning together many, many different aspects of life into one consistent, beautiful, useful, perfect thread is what is called the chachma of the isha. It comes from the isha quality in a person, from the yearning in a person's soul that drives them to make make everything that they encounter in life serve one purpose, which is acquiring chachma. No other acquisitions, no other forms of perfection are real perfection other than acquiring chachma. Nothing else brings a person eternal truth and satisfaction except chachma. And so here what we're going to do is read a little bit from the Rambam. I copied it because I want you to see his words and carefully analyze them. This is the last perek of the Mor Nevuchim. It's chapter 54, page 634. And this is the part of the last few chapters, the summation chapters, but this is how Rambam sums up the entire Moreh Nevuchim. It's all about Chachma. It's all about true Chachma. Okay, acquiring Chachma. So let's start to read. Let's go slowly. Page 634, where it says the ancients, you see? The ancient and the modern philosophers have made it clear that the perfection to be found in man consists of four species, four types. The first and the most defective, but with a view to which the people of the earth spend their lives, is the perfection of possessions. That is, of what belongs to the individual in the manner of money, garments, tools, slaves, land, and the other things of this kind. A man's being a great king also belongs to this species of perfection. Between this perfection and the individual himself, there is no union whatever. They're two, they're separate. There's I and all my possessions which are other than me, outside of me. There is only a certain relation, and most of the pleasure taken in the relation is purely imaginary between me and my possession that we take pride in. We feel it defines us. We spoke a lot about this in the tefillah class on Wednesday. We feel often we confuse our possessions with our identity. Proof. If we have something that we call, that we know has no real material value, but it has sentimental value, it means that this item, this object, gives me a sense of who I am, my worth. It's very precious to me. So if that item would be removed or taken away or stolen or smashed without care, we would feel violated, like some terrible loss, pain, because we associate an object with our identity. There's no question about it. We feel violated when people, when our stuff is stolen, when a robber comes into someone's house. It's a terrible feeling. There's no question. Look at a little baby. You take away a toy, it doesn't matter what the monetary value of the toy is. Mine, mine, mine gives me a sense of who I am. If I own this and this has value, or I own this and this has status, then I have value and I have status. It is difficult to distinguish sometimes between our possessions and I, who I am, the identity of the self. Rambam says this is a, therefore, defective form of perfection because any relationship is imaginary. Okay? I refer to one saying, this is my house. This is my slave. This money is mine. These are my soldiers. For if he considers his own individual self, he will find that all this is outside his self and that each of these possessions subsists as it is by itself. Therefore, when the relation between referred to has been abolished, there is no difference between an individual who has been a great king and the most contemptible of men. In other words, if both are reduced to nothing, so who are they? Is there still, you know, is there a difference between them? We recognize that a person must have a sense of the I, of the self, other than their possessions. Even when you take this scenario, you have someone who's like a great Rebbe, you know, let's say before the war, they have stories, right? And they had a malchus, a whole empire, so to speak. They had chassidim, and they were worshipped for their wisdom and for their great counsel. And they had a beautiful place to live because they were revered and they were treated like royalty. And they had a fur cloak and they had everything, right? And here they are in the camps, right? And there's no more chassidim and there's no more, you know, a glory and there's no more, you know, the possessions they had and the status they had, and they're sweeping the floor with a toothbrush, and maybe all their children have been destroyed or murdered. So who are they? If a person is identified with their possessions or even the people that give them a sense of their identity, and then that's all removed, so the person doesn't exist, right? The person no longer exists. Of course they exist. They have to have an I separate from all of these things. So he says, if a king, a great king, and the most contemptible of men, you know, each of them had nothing though, then what would be, right? Though nothing may have changed in any of the things that were attributed to them, they are no longer with their possessions. So the philosophers have explained that the endeavor and the efforts directed by man towards this kind of perfection are nothing but an effort with a view to something purely imaginary, to a thing that has no permanence. Okay, and even if these possessions should remain with him permanently during the whole of his life, he would by no means thereby achieve perfection in his self. Everybody could see this, right? This is easy to see. We have to disassociate the I from all the things we achieve. Everything we have in life is a message, a messenger, and then there's the message. The message is supposed to be developed, understood through chachma. With our chachma, utilize everything. It's all serves a purpose, can be used for to achieve great chachma, but in and of itself, it has no permanence and no true attachment, and it's not I. And the pursuit of this type of perfection, he says, is most effective of all. Okay. The second species has a greater connection than the first with the individual self, being the perfection of the bodily constitution and shape. Okay. I refer to that individual's temperament being most harmonious, his temperament being harmonious, right? His limbs well proportioned and strong as they ought to be. So that a person's body, a person's physical persona, their personality and their physical body being very easily often confused with the I, with the self. And he says, neither should this species of perfection be taken as an end, for it is corporeal perfection, that means physical, temporary, and does not belong to man qua man, is not essentially man, but qua animal, really it's associated with the animal aspect of man. For man has this in common with the lowest animals. Moreover, even if the strength of a human individual reached its greatest maximum, it would not attain the strength of a strong mule, and still less the strength of a lion or an elephant. The end of this perfection consists, as we have mentioned, in man's transporting a heavy burden or breaking a thick bone, and in other things of this kind, from which no great utility for the body may be derived. Utility for the soul is absent from this species of perfection, all perfection of the self, which is identified with the body and with the proper comportment of the self. This is all not as apt. There's no perfection. There's no perfection of the real self in this at all. Okay, that we can see, right? The next one is a little harder. The third species is a perfection that, to a greater extent than the second species, and certainly to the first, subsists in the individual self. This is the perfection of moral virtues. Now listen to Rambam's analysis of moral virtues. Moral virtues are certainly a goal. All the mishpatim, all the ben adam lechaveros, are all moral virtues. They come from a basic recognition of the other person, a sense that there is an other, and it's not me. You see, the other two, we confuse the other, the object, or my body as me. We consider the other the same as I, which is a huge mistake. But in moral virtues, it's because we see the other as the other, and I as I, that we go ahead to make sure to treat the other one okay. It's knowing that there's an I and there is something else that's not me. So that's already in the right direction, right? But he says this, the third species is a perfection that, to a greater extent than the second species, subsists in the individual self. This is the perfection of moral virtues. It consists in the individual's moral habits having attained their ultimate excellence. Imagine that. Most of the commandments, our mitzvahs, serve no other end than the attainment of this species of perfection. But this species of perfection is likewise a preparation for something else and not an end in itself. For all moral habits are concerned with what occurs between a human individual and someone else. This perfection regarding moral habits is, as it were, only the disposition to be useful to people. Consequently, it is an instrument for someone else. All moral development, all the good midos ben adam lechaveiro, are for the usage or for interrelationships with other people, instrument for someone else. But it is not necessarily my ultimate perfection that I've mastered the skill of concern for every person and proper treatment of every person. That is all still in attachment to some degree expressed through other people. For if you suppose a human individual is alone, acting on no one, you will find that all his moral virtues are in vain and without employment and unneeded, and that they do not perfect the individual in anything, right? So if there were no other people to be nice to be kind to take into consideration, to not steal from, to say, so where would the person's perfection be? There's got to be another definition. In other words, this is what we're saying in another way. Let's say you have a person who attained perfection in all these areas. So, for example, they have beautiful, wonderful possessions. They have a whole world of possessions, okay? And possessions mean they have family, and they have, how did they get these possessions? Because they made a major contribution to life. Maybe they invented something or discovered something or produced a very important product. So that's their achievement. And now they have physical things. They have objects and homes and things, and they have family, and they have their achievements, and they even have their reputation, the goodwill they extended to so many people. Okay? And we would think that all defines the person. But what if that person, and we know this, we have a personal, unfortunately, examples of this, develops a severe case of Alzheimer's, and they no longer have any relationship to their possessions. Forget about their objects. They're people. They don't know who people are. They can't contribute the way they ever did with their knowledge. They have nothing to say. They have nothing more to be creative about. They don't have any more emotions to help other people with, love and compassion and understanding. It's all gone. they don't relate to anything outside of themselves at all anymore. So then what is the person? Is there value to the person? Is there an I? Is there a perfection to the person? So many people will say, no, there's no more I left, and it's good. It would be merciful to let them go. And if they're suffering, it's a mitzvah. Help them out of their pain. Do we accept that? Do we believe that? We perceive that separated from all those things, even moral virtues, there's still something else. There's still the person to themselves and a degree of human perfection that can exist when all of that is removed. Where is the human perfection that stays with a person? Where is the human perfection that stays with a person when everything else is gone and clearly seen to be disattached from the person, no longer confused with the person themselves? Right? He says, even moral virtues, you know, without, if there's no one there, then the person, there's no one to, you know, without employment and unneeded, moral virtues are in vain, without employment, unneeded, and then they do not perfect the individual in anything, for he only needs them, and they again become useful to him in regard to someone else. But if you can't relate to someone else, then where is perfection? Or you don't have the opportunity to relate to someone else. Where is perfection? The fourth species is the true human perfection. It consists in the acquisition of the rational virtues. And what he means by that, he says, is this. I refer to the conception of intelligibles, which teaches what he's trying to say is true opinion concerning the divine things, true knowledge. This is the true reality, the ultimate end. And this is what gives the individual true perfection, a perfection belonging to him alone, and it gives him permanent perdurance, which is like endurance. It endures forever. Through it, man is man. That is what makes a person a Tzelem Elokim. It is the acquiring of true knowledge. That is true perfection. If you consider each of these perfections mentioned before, you will find that they pertain to others than you, not to you, even though according to the generally accepted opinion, they inevitably pertain to you and others. This ultimate perfection, however, pertains to you alone, and no one else being associated in it with you in any way. You see that? What a person comes to know to be emes, and the way they are attached to it, and how it makes them think a certain way, and how that defines a person. And it also eventually expresses itself through what they choose to do and how they act to people and what they acquire and how they relate to their possessions that we just talked about, their body that we just talked about, the other, all the aspects of life that involve the other. All of that is defined by true perfection, which is knowledge, or he says divine things, or what he calls in Hebrew, deot nechonot, true knowledge, which is what Hashem wants and what is true from Hashem's perspective. And this is what he says, they shall be only thine own, and so on. He quotes here from Mishle, that is the only thing that is truly yours. Therefore, you ought to desire to achieve this thing. That's the only chefetz, yearning a person should have. We are doing all of this to define the word chachmas lev, the wisdom, the chachma of the heart. When the heart wants these things, it is chacham, it is smart, it is wise. This is the only thing the heart should truly want and pursue and put effort into acquiring, and not these other forms of so-called perception, which, as he says, are not the person's ever, are always outside of the person and do not define the person. Therefore, you should desire to achieve this thing, which will remain permanently with you, and not weary and trouble yourself for the sake of others. O you who neglect your own soul, so that its whiteness has turned into blackness through the corporeal faculties, having gaining dominion over it. In other words, if a soul which is white turns black because everything else got in the way and becomes the things we pursue and get attached to and identify with, then woe is to that person. As it is said in the beginning of the poetical parables that have been coined for these notions, it says, and he quotes here from Shir HaShirim and Mishle, he gives a quote here, my mother's sons were incensed against me. They made me keeper of the vineyards, but mine own vineyard have I not kept. And he brings another proof text that says on this very same subject, lest thou give thy splendor unto others and thy years unto the cruel. Now, What we're going to do here is develop this a little bit further, and here is where we talk about the concept of the chokhmah, which is always referred to, and by the way, in female form, because the isha, capacity of a human being, is the yearning, as we said, the passion, the desire, that's called the isha, and if it's directed correctly, then it's chokhmah slave, and then it spins out two things, two different madrigas. We said one is taking all different variant strands and making them one beautiful, perfect, useful strand. Everything comes together. Talk about multitasking or being able to bring a lot of things in, you know, into one central core. That's the chokhmah, it's called isha of woman. That everything in life is not diffracted into its own, taking its own different path, but all serving one path. And then we'll talk about soon the idea of spinning while it's still on the goat, not letting it become tame at all, not taking separate things and blending them, but going right from the source to the end without any separation, from the wool on the back of the goat to the finished thread without any separation at all. So here, let's read a little further. You see why Rambam takes this. This is Rambam's final message in the whole of the Morne Ruchim. This is what everything comes down to. The prophets too have explained to us and interpret to us the self-same notion, just as the philosophers have interpreted them, clearly stating to us that neither the perfection of possessions, nor the perfection of health, nor the perfection of moral habits is a perfection of which one should be proud, or that one should desire. The perfection of which one should be proud and that one should desire is knowledge of Him, with a capital H, Hashem, may He be exalted, which is the true science. Yirmiyahu says concerning these four perfections, and now we understand a few psukim Yirmiyahu. Ko amar Hashem, thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might, let not the rich man glory in his riches, but him that glorieth, glory is in this, that he understands and knows me, Hashem. Consider how he mentioned them according to the order, giving them in the opinion of the multitude. For the greatest perfection, in their opinion, is the riches of man, which he lists last, right? Below him, the mighty man, and below him, the wise man, okay? Most people value, okay, first wealth, then power, then wisdom. All of these things don't value, he says. He says, only the knowledge of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. By the expression, the wise man should not glory in his wisdom, he means the moral virtues. The wisdom he's talking about here is the moral virtues. Don't glory in the fact that in this level you've achieved perfection. It still doesn't mean you know yourself, even if you're perfect to others. For such an individual is also held in high esteem by the multitude to whom the discourse in question is addressed. Therefore, these perfections are arranged in this order. Now, the sages, may their memory be blessed, apprehended from this verse the very notions we have mentioned and have explicitly stated, that which I've explained to you in this chapter, namely, that the term wisdom, chokhmah, because we're talking about chokhmah slave, the term chokhmah, used in an unrestricted sense and regarded as the end, means in every place, this is what chokhmah means, in every place, that it's used as an end, a goal. It means apprehension of him with a capital H. That's what chokhmah means. So it says, Isha had chokhmah, slave. We mean, okay, not just the chokhmah, as Rambam says, which is also referred to in a limited sense. He says in the beginning of this chapter that in a skill, an art form like spinning, is also called chokhmah, but it's chokhmah in the limited sense. When we talk about chokhmah in the unrestricted sense, ultimate chokhmah, we're talking about apprehension, understanding of Hashem. And so when it talks about women that have chokhmah slave to spin, that's this art form of spinning, physically not only but philosophically, is an expression of the apprehension of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, spinning all things together, combining all strands to serve one goal. And that the possession of the treasures acquired and competed for by man and thought to be perfection are not a perfection. And that similarly, all the actions prescribed by the law, I refer to the various species of worship and also the moral habits that are useful to all people in their mutual dealings, that all this is not to be compared with the ultimate end and does not equal it, but being but preparations made for the sake of this end. Therefore, when a person says, I am not religious, but I'm a good person, and they might have exceptionally awesome, amazingly developed moral qualities, it's wonderful, it's amazing, it is not the end, it is not the only tachlis. There's a tachlis way beyond that, which is knowledge of truth, knowing what's true, being connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, knowing all the dimensions of ruchnius. Being a moral person is not the end-all and be-all, and often it's a total substitute for ruchnius. It's a substitute for a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in an individual sense. It's not to be confused with that. That's what Rambam is saying. We commend people like that. It's amazing to be a person like that, but don't imagine that that's an end, that that's the end that we are striving for. He says it's just preparations made for the sake of the end. You can't get to the end if you're a creep and you're completely, not developed morally with your interactions with others. You certainly can't come anywhere. But if you're perfect in this area, it's a preparation made for the sake of the end, which is what we mentioned last week, that if a person's been Adam L'Chaveru is intact, okay, that they do recognize their responsibilities to the other as a Tzelem Elokim, they push themselves to be honest and to be true, and to be compassionate, all the things necessary to have moral virtues, it is very helpful. It brings them very close to Ben Adam L'Makom. And if you think that Ben Adam L'Makom separation, like we talked about the Egel, has nothing to do with Ben Adam L'Chavero, it's all wrapped up. If there's no Ben Adam L'Makom, instantly then there's no Ben Adam L'Chavero either. But if there's good Ben Adam L'Chavero, it's very close to, it's the good starting point for the real end. Here verbatim, a text of theirs, of the Chachamim, dealing with all these notions. It is a text in Bereishis Rabbah. It is said there the following, and you don't have the end of it, so I'll just read you the end and then we'll stop. One scriptural dictum says, and all things desirable are not to be compared unto her, her being Chachma. He brings this from here. Let me read it to you inside. This is from Tehillim, Mishlei 8:11. Here says, Kitova Chachma Mipninim, Chachma is better than all pearls, in other words, precious things. V'kol chafotzim, and anything that you desire, lo yishvuba, cannot be compared to her, to Chachma. All desirable things are nothing, not comparable to what you really should desire, which is Chachma. And then he brings another piece from Mishlei that says, similarly, and all things that you can desire are not compared to her. And Chazal say the difference between the two is, when it says all things desirable right here, kol chafatim, everything you desire, it's actually speaking about the mitzvahs, good actions, moral development, things you are allowed to desire are still not as precious as chachma. And when it says in the second verse, and all things that you can desire, that you cannot desire, it's to compare, or cannot be compared to her. That talks about precious stones and pearls, things you can't desire. In other words, things that you shouldn't really waste your time desiring. Those things are not comparable to her, and even the things you do desire, such as development and mitzvahs and all that, that is also not compared to the ultimate chachma. So, consider how concise is this saying, how perfect is he who said it, and how he laughed out nothing at all. Okay, and he goes on further. But clearly, the message of Rambam is very, very clear. Let's just mention here that in this lifelong attempt to acquire chachma, which is not easy, okay, there are many pitfalls along the way, which Rambam doesn't really focus on here. He just tells you this is the only thing to work on and the only thing to desire. But this wonderful article, there's a book here of different articles on Rambam, and this is from David Schatz, who's a scholar of Rambam. And he just happens to mention that, you know, that what's left out and which we have to, you know, understand and be aware of is the acknowledgement of the arduous nature of intellectual attainment, and in particular, the impediments that matter puts in our path for those who seek this goal. The difficulties incurred by one who is attempting to sustain intellectual focus and to see the light of truth on a continuing basis, not merely in brief flashes. These difficulties are noted in Rambam's introduction, but in the end, Rambam doesn't focus on them. He doesn't, you know, discuss the difficulties and the reality of apprehending briefly and then losing what one has attained and being denied what, you know, one is trying to achieve. And he, in other words, he doesn't mention here the difficulties, but he does acknowledge the difficulties in maintaining this focus, this desire, this chachma of the lev, not letting the heart stray off to start becoming attached to other things, losing its focus, not being chacham anymore. And we'll just end with this idea that, as it says here, the two psukim, there's one that's kol isha, every woman, that's pshat, every female aspect, which is the yearning that's from the internal intuitive knowledge of what's good that causes a person to want this chachma, that's called chachma slave, biyadea tavu, so with her hands she spins and brings it to Moshe Rabbeinu as a donation to the Mishkan, which is what we're building. But then it says, v'chol nashim, but the women, the collective group of women, asher nasa liban osana b'chachma, that their hearts motivated them an even greater chachma, they spun right off the goats. And what that seems to mean is, first of all, technically it's quite a skill, and secondly what it means is the capacity, and this is the highest madriga of all, to take the raw material, which is not usable in its raw form. In other words, any episode in life, any situation, the realities Hashem has given us, who we are, the children we've been given, the situation we've been given, the knowledge we've been given, the understanding we've been given, the opportunities we've been given through our achievements, you know, what we have physically, to take all that stuff, and without giving it a moment to ever be separated and be considered in and of itself, to have a life of its own, taking it straight and turning it into the desired end, never having that gap, those moments of inspiration and then those moments of loss, but going straight through. This reminds me of something we said about the shofar, right? And the question is, can you retroactively recapture that? Remember we said that we talked in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur time about the trua and the tzkiah. Does anyone remember this beautiful idea? The tzkiah, one of its analogies is that the trua is always surrounded by two tzkiahs, right? And the trua, you know, is, we call it shvarim trua. It's just two different versions of what the sound should be, but it's a broken tone. It's a broken tone. There are many spaces in between the tones, many, you know, moments of emptiness between the sounds. So when a person starts out in life, they have a dream and they have the vision that their life story will be one unbroken, seamless, you know, process between beginning, potential, and end, accomplishment, achievement, one long tzkiah. But the reality sets in, and we recognize this every Yom Kippur, it's not necessarily a tzkiah. It doesn't look like that. It looks like a trua. There are moments and gaps. Moments of inspiration, enlightenment, true chachmas halev, true proper yearning, and then emptiness, where it's all diffracted in a million different directions. And then there's another good moment, and that's what he just talked about, the difficulty in hold in consistency. And then, at the end, there's another tzkiah. In other words, how do you get to that final tzkiah? How is it that the end of our life is the tzkiah? That in the end, when we look back in our life, it does sound like it's Kia. How does that work? It was one unbroken journey, when in the middle we know it's not, it's very broken. Tshuva, stepping back, reassessing, starting again, tshuva me ahava, tshuva from love that comes from the heart, that fills in all those gaps in the trua and turns it into its Kia. So although the holiest level is to take it straight, so to speak, from the source in its raw form and without it being separated at all and taking on a life of its own, not becoming tamei, which is another way of saying that, turning it straight into the beautiful, ultimately, coverings that were used in the Mishkan. Right? That's the ultimate chachma. That's already not just chachma slave basher. Nasa liban osana. Their hearts were elevated, raised up to a degree, motivated with a constant vision that kept them focused always. That's the nashim, that the women, the force of that, you know, in a person, and it's communal. This is my thought. The reason it says the hanashim plural is because this is a collective effort. It is very hard to maintain this in a vacuum, on your own, surrounded by people who don't share that vision. Very hard, because they will do is break you down and become cynical and laugh at it. But if there's a group, a plural, a rabim of people with this vision, then you get caught up with it and caught along with it, and perhaps helps you achieve this without all the pitfalls along the way. But that you can take or leave that. So here we have an idea that is consistent with the concept of building a Mishkan and the contribution of the specifically the Isha to the ultimate Mishkan that we build out of our lives. Okay. Yes, questions?
It's interesting that the women who didn't get to the Egel and were the first ones to get to the Mishkan have this expression, and then right after it says Bezalel. Bezalel also has this Chachmas Lev. It mentions the same expression. And when you think of his background, that his grandfather had been killed in the Egel, and then he was able to have this connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where he had this same...
The phrase Chochmas Lev is used regarding men too. How it's used here specifically regarding the Isha is in spinning, in putting it all together. That's where the specific Isha aspect is. Okay, everybody, have a wonderful week. If you don't want the Rambam papers, bring them back to me, please.
Question.
Yes.
So, literally, though, this is like a literal question.